The Book Nook on WYSO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and today my guest on the program is Brad Ricca. His book, Mrs. Sherlock Holmes, recently released, and he joins us by telephone from the Cleveland area. Welcome to the program, Brad.
Hi, Vic. Thanks for having me.
Are you actually in Cleveland?
I am in Cleveland, yeah.
Okay. How'd you get the idea for this project about Mrs. Sherlock Holmes?
It was kind of a strange story. So, I was looking for an idea for my second book, and I thought I had a great idea, and they shot it down. And then I thought I had another even better idea, and they shot it down. And another, and so it went on and on like that for almost a year. I knew I wanted to tell a story that was a little more serious, and I'm really interested in kind of the things the book talks about the mass media and about law enforcement and crime and missing girls. So I was just kind of trying to find a story that could get at all that. And I was researching a crime organization in the early part of the century called the Black Hand.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really strange and kind of mysterious. And I was just looking through this old copy of the New York Evening World, online, and just going through these pages and seeing if I could find anything interesting. And all of a sudden, I clicked the mouse, and, it'd be more dramatic if I said I turned the page, but, I'm not going to lie about it. I clicked the mouse, and all of a sudden I see this picture of this woman, and the headline says, Mrs. Sherlock Holmes Solves Crime All Throughout the City. Mrs. Sherlock Holmes Solves Another Crime in New York City, something like this. And I looked at it and knew that there was this story here just based on the title. And I read the actual article, which was this big interview with her, with Grace Humiston, who was this detective and this lawyer that the press nicknamed Mrs. Sherlock Holmes. And the story I read was about 15 times more interesting and more exciting than anything that was in my head. So I knew I had a story almost immediately.
And the end result is this new book. It's a true crime book, Mrs. Sherlock Holmes, Murder, Slave Trafficking, and the Unlikely True Story of Mrs. Grace Humiston, Special Civilian Investigator to the New York City Police Department. She was the first U.S. district attorney of the female sex, right?
Yeah. And that's another thing. When I found that out, that's a big deal. That's a big, historical marker. And this was something that I had never heard of before. And I'd certainly never heard of her. But then even it's just doing, early research, this wasn't something that people had seized upon, that, she was the first one to be named, the first female to be named a U.S. District Attorney.
Brad Ricca joins us. His book is Mrs. Sherlock Holmes. Who was Grace Humiston?
That is a fantastic question because I don't really know.
Mm.
When you write these things, you developed this, kind of strange, really intimate relationship with these people. But with her, she's a mystery. And that's the one thing, one of the things I really like about the book. It's a true crime book and it's a biography. But to me, it's really a mystery because we have this woman who's solving all these crimes, but at the same time, we know little about her. I mean, what we do know is that she was she was married. She came from money in New York City, and she married fairly early and got divorced fairly early, and she decided she was going to go to law school, which was by itself rather extraordinary. So she went to NYU Law School at night, and she immediately excelled, and she graduated, and she passed the bar. And all of a sudden, she's opening her own law firm. And the interesting thing about it is here's this rich woman who's kind of turning her back on society life, and she opens this law firm that's primarily for the poor and for immigrants, and she turns no one away, even if they just pay her with food or knitting. She takes it, and she takes cases from all over the city, and she develops this reputation as someone who's willing to get her hands dirty and, you know, who works inside the law but also a little outside the law. So she becomes a detective, too. And then she becomes a U.S. district attorney, and she starts taking on cases that send her to the South and send her all over the world and, you know, ultimately turn her into this character whom the papers call Mrs. Sherlock Holmes.
And during the course of her career as an investigator, as an attorney, et cetera, she became very much involved in battling a scourge of that era. It has sort of an archaic name now. Of course, it still exists, but at the time they called it white slavery. What is white slavery?
Yeah, so when you open these newspapers from the time, you know, all you see is that term, white slavery. And it's a term that, you know, came out of a few different outlets, you know, and the news media loved it. But it primarily meant prostitution. It was a kind of a signal word. You know, they couldn't print that in the papers, but that's what it meant. But at the same time, it meant something you know, in many ways, deeper and darker and worse. You know, what we today call sex trafficking or human trafficking, which is, you know, when you think about it, that's very different from white slavery as a word, but it's still very similar. And you know, as we know, is a major problem. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to write the book, is to find out, you know, when this started to be what it is in America today. And this was her life's calling was, you know, what they called white slavery. And it's when, you know, girls and women would disappear. And what would happen is the police would look for a couple days or a week and say, well, they probably eloped. But you look at the numbers of women who went missing, and it's clear that there wasn't that much, you know, elopement. I mean, there was certainly some, but not on the numbers that were being reported. And so she looked into all of this. And what I found out in the book is, you know, some of it was, you know, running off with a boyfriend. Some of it was just pure media. You know, the media made it up. That, you know, stories of white slavery sold papers. Uh-huh. So they would make up things about it. But at the same time, there were things that were absolutely happening. And she would track people down, and she would rescue people, and some of it would get reported, and some of it wouldn't. But this was really her crusade, was missing girls, because she felt that they weren't getting a fair shake, you know, in many cases, sometimes their parents, but certainly not from the cops, and certainly not from the papers and society who just called them, you know, bad girls. And she said, these are not bad girls, these are good girls, who are being taken advantage of by bad people.
In case you're just tuning in, my guest on the Book Nook is Brad Ricca. His book is Mrs. Sherlock Holmes, Murder, Slave Trafficking, and the Unlikely True Story of Mrs. Grace Humiston, Special Civilian Investigator to the New York City Police Department. And the thread that kind of ties all this together is one particular case. We hear about a lot of different cases, but the one that really made her reputation was the cold case, the disappearance of an 18-year-old woman named Ruth Krueger, and the ripples that came away from that case, which involved a lot of police incompetence and corruption. This is really pretty horrifying, the whole story.
Yeah. I mean, there's always one case. You know, there's hundreds of cases. There's thousands of cases. You know, throughout time, there's millions of cases like this. But this was her case, and like you said, it was an 18-year-old woman who went out to do errands on the day before Valentine's Day in New York, and she disappeared. And the cops, you know, did their search. They looked for her. You know, this is before, really, the Missing Persons Bureau. And one of the things, one of her legacies, even though we know so little about her, is, you know, what we know as the Missing Persons Bureau today. But the cops looked around and said, you know, like I said before, she probably eloped. You know, we'll never find her. No big deal. And her father just wouldn't stand for this because, you know, his daughter Ruth taught Sunday school. She just graduated from high school. She was a good girl. So he hired Grace. And unlike the cops who assumed that it was her fault, she assumed that it was the fault of someone else. And she went and investigated this case, and it turned out to be longer than she thought it was. It has twists and turns that really are almost unbelievable. I don't want to spoil it for your listeners, yeah. But it really, just when you think it's been solved, something else happens, or there's someone else who admits to it, or someone else points a finger. And it, like cases like this often do, it stretches out over a period of years and years. And this reaches, you know, from New York to Italy, and goes on and on and on. And like you said, it has ripple effects for other things. Is one of the main things is after the case is solved, the New York Police Department undergoes a review process that was the biggest in its history until then. And what comes out of it, you know, is, like you said, it's, you know, certainly gross incompetence, but also something even more sinister, that the police may have been involved in it as well. So it's one of those cases where, you know, no case can stand for all cases, but this case, you know, we can learn things that apply to other cases. You know, when this type of thing happens, what do, you know, different people do? What do the police do? What do lawyers do? What does the press do? And who's left in the middle is the victim. You know, do any of these ways actually help the victim, or do they do the opposite? So it's one of those cases that just it goes on for a long time in the book. It's the centerpiece of the book, and I think it's okay that it goes on. You know, it's very interesting. But it goes a lot of places that you wouldn't think it would. And at the end of the book, it does something that I still find shocking, is it goes back in time. And when she realizes that there was, you know, something maybe she missed years and years ago, and it's just, you know, one of those things where you really feel for the person, even though it's been 100 years gone by.
You do a fine job of taking your readers back 100 years and depicting what New York City was like then. And we're picturing this innocent young 18-year-old woman, Ruth Krueger, who just wanted to get her ice skates sharpened. And back in that day, where would you go to get your ice skates sharpened? Well, heck, a motorcycle shop, of course. And that's the last place where she's seen, and this, of course, becomes a focus of the searching. And I think it's really important to point out that for every Sherlock Holmes, there was a Dr. Watson. And for her, he wasn't really a Dr. Watson, but this Crone character, he is instrumental in so many of these cases. What a fascinating guy he is.
Oh, I'm so glad you think so, and I appreciate the kind words on creating, you know, kind of calling back old New York, because that's like the hardest thing to do, but it's the part I enjoy. But yeah, Crone he's my favorite character. I mean, he's not a character because he was real. But you can't make up somebody like this. You know, he's Hungarian, he has an accent, he has a scar across his eye. He's a hard-boiled private investigator. And he really is. I think you're right. I mean, he's not like, you know, Watson kind of shuffles around and, you know, take notes. I mean, but Crone is by her side, you know, through countless cases, a lot of we don't know about. And she's the only one he he's the only one that she trusts.
Hmm.
And it's really interesting to see how much of the case he solves as opposed to what she solves. I mean, she certainly has the ideas, and she's willing to get her hands dirty. But Crone really gets his hands dirty.
I'll say.
Literally and figuratively. And just the, some of the things he does with her and on his own, you know, he travels back to Hungary to solve a strange murder case, and his involvement with the communists afterward. He's a fascinating character.
I love how you leave us hanging on what happened to the killer that he uncovered in Hungary. That was cute.
Yeah.
Did you know what happened and just kind of left it out, or does no one know?
I don't know what happened
to
him, but I strongly imply what happened to
him.
Because the source I had also strongly implied what happened.
Maybe a little vigilante justice.
Yeah, that Crone took care of business.
Uh-huh, okay.
And it seemed like he was that kind of guy.
I see.
And especially over there and in that time period, it didn't surprise me. So I just kind of, you know, reproduced the way the source did, because I thought that was really ominous. You know, whether it was that way or not, you know, we have no way of knowing.
Hmm.
But it makes a good story.
What was the research like for this, Brad? You must have had to do a ton of it. Did it help to have access to the internet, or did you have to go into those musty, dusty files scattered around?
Yeah, this one was real interesting, because I thought when I started, I said, wow, here's this, you know, she had all these cases. She was the first female district attorney, U.S. district attorney. You know, certainly there's a library or archive with all her notes, or all her stuff, and there was nothing. And I looked for months and months, almost a year, and it just doesn't exist. And, I mean, she was a lawyer for, you know, the majority of her life, and she didn't even leave a will. So there was very little from her, you know, so no court, no individual court cases, that kind of thing. So I really had to get creative. I just had to get lucky and find some of the major court cases I found. I was able to find kind of all over. You know, there were a lot in New Jersey, and upstate New York had stuff. New York City didn't have too much, which was surprising. And a lot of newspapers, too, because I wanted this to be about, you know, how the media creates these stories in some ways. And the media, you know, there were almost 20 papers at the time in New York alone, so that was a big help. But it was kind of all over the place, kind of a Frankenstein's monster of research, you know, anywhere from court cases and legal stuff to just things I could find in newspapers and here and there. And I actually even found someone who knew Grace and talked to him. So it's kind of a little bit of everything.
He must have been old.
Yeah, he was very he's very young.
Okay.
When he knew her. And so, you know, he didn't know anything, really.
Mm.
And, you know, we spoke on condition of anonymity. So he didn't really, you know, because he was young, but he then called me back later, and he said, I did remember something. He said, I remember the adults calling her a name behind her back. And I said, this was, you know, late in her life. And I said, well, what's the name? And he said, they called her Disgrace.
Ooh.
And that, to me, made no sense, because at the time, you know, I had built her up as this, you know, Sherlock Holmes solving crimes, do-gooder of justice. But, you know, like anyone, not like Sherlock Holmes. Well, he had his faults, too. But Grace was human. And, you know, what I found out is later in her life, you know, there were some things that she did that, you know, her family or she may not have been proud of. So I think that's where the nickname came from.
You have a little fun when you open the book by actually bringing the creator of Sherlock Holmes, Arthur Conan Doyle, to New York City, and we follow him around a little bit. I thought that was a nice technique to kind of bring us into the story.
Oh, I really appreciate that, because somebody told me a little bit ago, they said, well, I thought this was going to be all about Sherlock Holmes, and he's just in the beginning. yeah, I thought there was, you know, there had to be some, I mean, I love Sherlock Holmes. I absolutely love Sherlock Holmes. I thought there had to be some way of where we had to bridge the stories with this real life person, Grace. And I found that, you know, he visited, you know, a year or so ahead of her biggest case, and all of a sudden he's saying all these things that are, you know, kind of really bad. that might be shocking to people that, I mean, it's the times, certainly, you know, it's 1914, but, yeah, I thought it worked really well, too, because he talks about the women's right to vote, and he talks about we need more detectives in New York. He talks about all these things, and in some ways he's kind of saying, well, we need someone like Grace, but he doesn't know who she is, and he doesn't know that it's going to be a woman, and then a couple of years later she comes on the scene, and she's kind of exactly the person New York needs to solve this huge case.
If those were true quotes from him, he did have a tendency to say some kind of stupid things, and we'll leave that to readers to discover his commentary. Sort of an arrogant, I guess probably typical of the period attitude that he had. And it must have been nice for you in working on this story to kind of get out of Cleveland, because I understand that your first book was a very Cleveland-centric book, Superboys, The Amazing Adventures of Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, the creators of Superman. They were so from Cleveland, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. That's an all-Cleveland, 90% of the book is in Cleveland, and I could just stay here and do all the research and go to the library here, which was kind of nice. In some ways, but at the same time, once I was done, I love Cleveland, but I said, you know, that book was kind of my love letter to Cleveland, too, and I said, well, it's time to, you know, go somewhere. My wife's from New York, so I said, okay, we'll do the next book. We'll do it for you. So.
Okay. Were you one of...
It was good to get out.
Were you one of these kids that spent all your time in the comic book store?
Totally.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was, you know, my mom will say all the time, she'll say, you know, I can't believe I let you read those comics. But she was a teacher, and I think she, you know, not to make it all put a happy point to it, but I think she realized that it's good stuff, you know, to be reading no matter what it is when you're a kid. I couldn't get enough of that stuff. And then, you know, after that, I started reading books and couldn't get enough of that. I think it's just another, and I think, you know, we get that now. You go to a library now, and it's like you go in the kids section, it's all comics. But, it's just another medium for telling stories.
I have not read your book about the creators of Superman, but I'm guessing a big part of the story must be how they kind of got a raw deal on the rights to their creation.
Yeah. So they come up with the idea for Superman, which is this, like, when you spend like more than 10 seconds thinking about it, you realize what a really crazy idea it is. You know, somebody jumping around in their underwear and... Uh-huh. You know, no one had really done it. And I found out that they, you know, the whole story of Superman and all his adventures, they just stole from their real life. You know, all the characters in their real life, they just turned into characters in Superman. But, yeah, and it becomes the most popular thing in America. But they sell it for $130. And they never get that ownership back. So, you know, in some ways it's a tragedy because the company that owns it, you know, ends up making tons of money and still does.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, maybe I'm more optimistic, but it's, you know, there's, I'm pretty convinced that Superman is, you know, pretty close to an immortal fictional character that we might have, you know, for as long as this thing called civilization lasts. So mm-hmm. that's pretty cool that, you know, two kids from Cleveland, poor Jewish kids, came up with Superman. That's, you know, they may not have gotten the money, but, you know, they created great art. So that's pretty cool. Mm.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. It's the Book Nook. My guest is Brad Ricca. We've been talking about his book, Mrs. Sherlock Holmes, Murder, Slave Trafficking, and the Unlikely True Story of Mrs. Grace Humiston, Special Civilian Investigator to the New York City Police Department. And we talked for a few moments there about Superboys, The Amazing Adventures of Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, the creators of Superman, his first book. And I can't help it, because of the time that I grew up, when I picture Superman, I always see the actor George Reeves. Always.
Yeah.
I see his face.
Yep.
Yeah. And there's a tragic story on its own.
Oh, yeah.
He really identified with that character, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. And it's more than that, though. It's more so many people. He was there and is their Superman.
Uh-huh.
And that's the thing about the characters. You know, any generation, they have their own version of it. You know, the reverence people have towards George Reeves, I just, you know, find astounding. And, you know, I'm really very, I mean, I'm a Christopher Reeve Superman guy, but just uh-huh. have tremendous respect for the way people deal with George Reeves, because he was Superman. You know, I mean, then he has this tragic story. But, yeah.
Well, now that you mentioned Christopher, it sounds like that role is kind of a jinxed role.
Yeah, that's what people say. They call it the Superman curse.
Hmm. Well, Brad, this is a big, thick book, Mrs. Sherlock Holmes. I'm sure you're glad that it's out there in the world, and it took you a long time to write it. But I'm guessing, based upon our conversation, that you're scouting around for the next project right now, or maybe you even have it. What are you working on?
Nothing yet. But when I find out, I'll promise to let you know.
Okay. Are you going to stick in the true crime, or are you going to go somewhere else maybe?
No, I think I want to do something totally different, because after the Superman book, I knew I wanted to do something totally different, and I really hate true crime. So I figured, well, why not write true crime? The funny thing is, after the Superman book, people said, well, now you have to do a Batman book. And I said, there's no way I'm, you know, going to do a Batman book. But at the same time, I ended up writing about a rich person who fights for the poor. She wears all black all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, so she's kind of like Batman anyway, except, you know, she's real and she's a woman. But, yeah, I don't know, something different.
All right. Well, we really appreciate your time today, Brad.
Thank you. This is a great conversation.
You've been listening to The Book Nook, and my guest has been Brad Ricca. His book is Mrs. Sherlock Holmes, Murder, Slave Trafficking, and the Unlikely True Story of Mrs. Grace Humiston, Special Civilian Investigator to the New York City Police Department. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes. Thanks for listening.